You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
I'm Peanut Tillman, and this is the NFL Player Second Acts Podcast. I got my guy Roman Harper with me. We're in Phoenix, Arizona at the NFL annual meetings. It's a great time. We got some golf in. It's got some good weather.
The weather's great. I hit the ball great in golf. I'm looking forward to winning more, even more, even more. And so what we got now is I want to make sure we tell all of our followers to give us a follow, a like, a review, a comment, anywhere you listen to your podcast, whether it's Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio Podcasts. You tell a friend to make sure to tell a friend to tell a friend to check us out. We actually got another follower at breakfast this morning. So just know we continue to spread the word and we're doing our thing. Peanut, who we got today?
We got Vikings head coach Kevin O'Connell and Bears GM Ryan Poles. Check out their interview. Today's guest went 13-4 in his first season as a head coach. He won Super Bowl 56 as an offensive coordinator for the Rams. He is a San Diego State alum. He got his first coaching gig in the NFL in 2015. Please welcome our guest, head coach of the Minnesota Vikings, Kevin O'Connell. So you were at the game last night, right? San Diego State. Had a huge, huge win.
Alabama.
Unbelievable. Wait, what team did y'all beat?
Alabama. Yeah.
He went to Alabama, and I love
it. I'll tell you what.
Oh, my God.
I've never seen, just the athletes on that court. San Diego State has done an unbelievable job with their program, but Alabama, my goodness. I mean, they're number one overall seed for a reason in the tournament.
Yeah.
We had to slop it up a little bit, a little bit of a street fight to get that one. That's kind of the way we play.
But lets you, to me though, it doesn't really matter about what seed you are because y'all got the job done, right?
Well, it was the first time in a while for me being at an NCAA tournament game. I'm sure you guys have been to those games before.
Yeah, I have.
It doesn't feel like, it just feels like they're, regardless of seeds, it feels like there's two teams just playing.
Right.
And anything can happen. Like when you're there, you actually feel how a 16 could beat a Purdue, FDU could beat Purdue.
Yeah.
You feel it because that ball goes up, momentum swings, and
that's
regardless
so big in
of,
basketball too. It's momentum.
Crazy.
All right,
it's the same in football.
Who's on the it's a streak going on. Who goes hot and win? And so lucky for me, I didn't get to watch the game. I was flying here last night, so I didn't watch the game. Yeah. I did keep up with the scores, and so San Diego State was up, but it was one half. I'm like, if Alabama shoots well, they beat anybody in the country.
Yeah.
Clearly, they didn't shoot well. San Diego State, and after talking to some of my friends, it wasn't about what Alabama didn't do, but it was more about what San Diego State did to Alabama last night. They had a block party, playing great defense. Just give me a little insight of what you saw as a basketball matchups, because I know you're a big sports guy.
Well, shoot, they had to be physical because, you look at these guys. Alabama has, first of all, they're big, they're long, they're athletic. My man, some of these guys, I just watching them in warm-ups, you're looking at one side of the court, it was the old, I know you guys did this in your playing career sometimes, you're playing against a team, you look across the 50, and you're like, my goodness.
Oh, yeah.
We'll take that guy, that guy, that guy, we'll take them all. I'm standing there with my son, I brought my 8-year-old Caden, and we're watching San Diego State warm up on one side, and we're watching
Alabama.
Alabama's
totally better.
And you're like, I'm having a tough time seeing it. And then that game got started, and it literally turned into, it was nasty, kind of physical, a lot of guys on the ground, big diving for loose balls, and Alabama, I just thought it was a great game. San Diego State's up at the half, then Alabama goes up 9 kind of early on in the second half, and you could just see the skill. Guys above the rim, long threes, quickness, speed, all the things that made them the best team in the country. But then San Diego State just, it was like they decided. Right about the time they got, their bench actually got a tee. They got teed up. I don't know who said what. But right about that time, I don't know if it was the head coach or who it was that got it. They kind of clicked into gear, and every loose ball became theirs. Every long rebound became theirs. Extra possessions, and before you know it, that one seed started to press a little bit towards the end, and huge win for the program.
So basically,
for sure.
Alabama cave when the pressure y'all cave, right? That sounds about right.
They're young though. I basically stayed at the Alabama team hotel, and talking to, they're like, we're really good, but we're young.
They're very young.
They don't know how they're going to respond. And San Diego State's got a bunch of grown men on their
22,
team.
23 year old guys. It's totally
and I think
different.
That matters.
It does
I think
matter.
It matters. Time.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad y'all lost. I'm glad your team won.
Thank you.
It's bad because you know Peanut and I got a workout in this morning, and look, I only packed what I packed, so I wasn't anticipating the Alabama loss. So I got my Alabama gear on this morning. Literally got some guy from Gonzaga apologizes for me.
Yeah.
Had some random guy come up to me. Oh man, I'm a San Diego State alum, and I'm like, you know, I didn't even ask you to come over here.
Sprinkling salt in the wound. I loved every minute of it.
Everybody
I was
just
like,
keeps asking me about it. I'm just like, you know, I only packed
way.
What I packed, man. I'm sorry,
I was cheesing
man.
The whole time.
Not,
it was great.
It was great.
I loved every minute.
Congrats.
Yeah. Congrats.
I will say this much. The Alabama fans, they were awesome. Like during the game, the atmosphere was great. But even after talking to some of them, you know, they were, hey, credit to where it's due.
Yeah.
San Diego State won that game, how they played. You know, we got the positivity towards that young team, man. I know some of those guys are going to probably be playing in the NBA, but shoot, they got a heck of a program.
We were so proud of them this year. And I know we're supposed to be talking football, but it's on basketball right now. We were so proud
this
of
is
them.
Good. Yeah.
And it was really good. And also, Alabama fans, they love on the basketball team as much as they can. If that would have been a loss on the football side,
no.
It's totally different emotions.
Yeah.
Just know that. It would not have been all nice and everybody, you know, they would not have handled that as well.
No. Either would Coach Saban.
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah. So I've had the pleasure of going to two Super Bowls.
Yep.
I've lost two Super Bowls thanks to Peyton Manning. You won one, you lost one, but we've had the joy of going. I know you won Super Bowl 56. I hate Roman numerals. My Roman numerals off.
Yeah.
But Super Bowl 56 with the Rams.
Yep.
And 3 days after winning the Super Bowl, you get hired by the Vikings.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you had enough time to like really enjoy
no.
that championship?
No. And the crazy thing is, you know, I can remember it, you know, I officially became the head coach that Wednesday following the game. But I mean, I was trying to put together staff,
right?
Even through the interview process,
mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't want to ever leave anything for my current job
mm-hmm.
that would have left me thinking, what if I would have done a better job with the third down pass game plan
mm-hmm.
or red zone or whatever it was. So I was all in. But then I'd go home at night, 11 o'clock at night, and I'd stay up 4 or 5 hours putting together staff, Zoom calls with potential coaches, just trying to make sure that, you know, the Vikings weren't in the playoffs last year, so they're not waiting to,
right.
you know. That's great that you're coaching in the Super Bowl, but you got some responsibilities already. So it was a lot, but I just remember when I told myself I got to, you guys remember Super Bowl week. It's
kind of,
you know, and we were home in L.A. We didn't even go to the team hotel till Friday or Saturday, whatever it was. So I just said about Wednesday of that Super Bowl game week, I was going to put it all away. And about Wednesday, about 1 o'clock, I was still doing, you know, it was, the phone would ring and there was never totally kind of brushing it to the side, but I was able to focus on it. Unbelievable experience to win that game. But yeah, I literally took my son and daughter, my oldest two, to the parade and then met my wife and the rest of my family literally an hour from, I left the parade about an hour into it. And went to go get on the plane and flew to Minnesota and hadn't been back since to California since, you know, basically that day. So it was fast, man. It was not your normal. Let's just put it this way. Other people were enjoying that parade
right.
a little bit more than I was.
Yeah,
I was going to say, because, you know, a lot of times, you know, after games you win, okay, we got 24 hours to enjoy.
Yeah, no.
Do you even have?
I did go to the party.
Super Bowl, right?
I did go to the Super Bowl party. Got to spend a lot of time, but I mean, before you, it was just. I'll never forget. I stayed out. Obviously, you play that game. You go to the party. Mr. Kroenke put on an unbelievable Super Bowl party. Stayed out late. I just remember my phone going off about 6:30 or 7 o'clock the next morning, and I might have went to bed 2 hours before that. And it was people in Minnesota like, "Hey, we need you to. We're trying to get this done or this coaching contract done, or are you good with this?" And I was like, And it hit me in that moment. I'm like, this is, nobody cares. Nobody cares.
Nobody cares,
So I listened to another interview you did, and you talked about, you know, managing your time.
Yeah.
And so I'm not great at that. So
I'm working on it myself. Okay. Man.
And you said, as a head coach, you always feels like, man, there's always something to do.
Yeah.
Somebody's always depending on you, whether it's, you know, it's through the organization, it's charitable causes, it's, you know, doing something for a player or your coaches, making sure the coordinators, everybody's has something going on. Yep. So, and versus a coordinator, maybe you had a little bit more waiting time for somebody else to tell you or assistant to tell you where you need to be going or something to be doing. So how do you manage that? How do you get to this point? Or are you still in this learning process? Or maybe just give us some insight on the difference of being from a coordinator time example to now the head coach and now running the whole thing.
Yeah, I think the unique thing for me is trying to be the play caller too,
right?
On offense. So really, although I've got some great coaches, I got a great offensive coordinator in Wes Phillips. As the play caller, I feel an obligation to get in front of the unit. I need to be with Kirk and in the quarterback room. I can't just be the voice that shows up mm-hmm. on game day and be in his ear and be calling plays. So you've got to totally submerse yourself in the offense with those players, installs in the pass game, run mm-hmm. game, you know, how we're going to play the game, articulating what it's going to take to win the game. All those things you do as a coordinator, but I just tried to do a lot of those things on a whole scale with our entire team. You know, I learned from some really good coaches, the previous team I was with and with the Rams, being around Sean and really the coolest thing he did for me was said, hey, you're going to be a head coach. Why don't you just kind of tag along on a lot of this stuff? So I watched him go through a lot of that process.
Kind of like an internship.
It's really what it felt like at times. And you know, even times where I shouldn't even have been in his office. Hey, why don't you come in? We'll talk about, you know, the OTA schedule or something crazy. Yeah. And you're like, man, this guy truly is pouring into me to develop me to become a head coach in this league. So, you know, too much is given, much is required. So I tried to soak it all in. He's one of my closest friends. But what that really let me see is he's a play caller.
Right.
That tries to be totally all in on his team. Culture matters, all those things. You can say a lot of things.
Yeah.
But then you got to back it up. And the ultimate enemy to all that is time when you're trying to do everything. I also have, you know, we had our fourth child during the season, about week 8 on a Friday. What the heck? Let's just go play the Commanders in Washington. And I left my wife at the hospital. And luckily, her mom was in town. You know, she'd had the baby. Baby was healthy. Wife was healthy.
Good.
And I went back and went to walk through and then got on the plane and flew to Washington. So,
but isn't it crazy that we do that, though?
It's nobody. A lot of people gave me a, you know, I thought people would be like, man, what a coach going to. But I took some pretty good, you know, pushback from like our female fan base of, hey, you don't know what it's like to have a child. You're there supporting, you know, basically being a cheerleader for it. But, you know, we're the ones that I can't believe you left her at the hospital. There were some people that genuinely were not happy that I left.
I got the flip side of it, though, because we had played a game. My wife was pregnant and someone asked the question, if she goes in labor, you know, are you going to go? And I was like, well, yeah, I'll just miss the game. And then everyone was like, oh, why would you do that? Do you only get paid for 16 games, you only work 16 days a year and all this other stuff. Like, so it's kind of like damned if you do, damned if you don't.
Oh,
and
no doubt.
It was one of those questions. I was just like, whatever. I
missed my first child's birth because she came on a playoff game. And, you know, I was in San Francisco. She wasn't supposed to go. She was late.
Yeah.
Then next, you know, I get miss like 6 phone calls and you look up, you're like, oh, she's going to labor. She's like, I'm going to hold it. I'm like, okay, babe, I appreciate that. And then it's like, nah, second quarter is all good.
But when did you first get the first text you actually saw? Was it before the game?
No, it was after the game.
It was after.
I had no idea.
What would you have done if you had got that? Like, you come in pregame, the last 20 minutes you come in from that, what would you have done?
Would have been emotional and like I probably been a little shook. You know, you want to be angry, you want to be in this zone,
yeah.
And all of a sudden, you get like the picture of your first child. It's just like it's gotta shake you a little bit. No way you can't be thinking about that and then try and go out there before the biggest playoff game of your know at the time. But it was fireworks. It was a great game. But talking about a day of emotions, though. Yeah. I mean, you're playing a playoff game. Actually, you know, your daughter's born. You lose the playoff game after you put so much into it, a nail biter. And then, you know, everybody else is sad, and then you're kind of happy.
I remember that game, yeah.
Was that against us?
No, that was against San Francisco.
Alex kind of ran that ball down the left.
Ran the quarterback
side
sweep.
Mine, yep.
We blitzed from his right side the whole game, and all of a sudden they ran quarterback sweep away.
Yeah.
That's part of your inventory, right? That's what you call former film.
I can remember some of the plays in that game. Was it, who'd they have, Crabtree? And
yes.
Oh, Crabtree.
The tight end, Vernon Davis, caught the game winner.
That's right.
And so it was a great game. I mean, we had 5 turnovers.
Was that when they had Tony Montana?
Yeah. That was the Tony Montana game where they played.
Future was on the dugout. Old Candlestick.
It was rocking. It was a great atmosphere. It was electric. I'm telling you.
And that's saying something because you played in one of the best for a long time.
Thank you.
At the Superdome, man.
Yeah, sure. That was one of the best atmospheres I've ever been a part of. So,
So you're talking about Sean's one of your closest friends, and I know 2008 you got drafted. By the Patriots, Josh McDaniels. He was the OC at the time. Who would you say you're? And I'm sure you learned a lot from him. Just kind of him and Tom and all that.
Yeah.
Who would you say you're? I think a lot of coaches they talk about being a coaching tree.
Yeah.
Like, who would you say you're a disciple of, or who's a part of, like,
just
what tree did
so
you come
much,
from?
Honestly, so much of what we do offensively and everything was kind of shaped in L.A. And what we tried to do. So the first name is always Sean McVay, just because he did so much for me as a coach.
And yeah.
It was really cool because I had been friends with Sean for about my entire coaching career, since about 2015.
Mm-hmm.
But really kind of, he gets the head job in LA. He's instrumental in me getting the quarterback job in Washington as he's kind of leaving town. And I just never forget it being like, he told me at the time, he's like, we'll circle back and I'm going to get a chance to hire you. And then 3 years later, he's bringing me out there to be the coordinator. A huge moment in my career. And then also ultimately we, you know, make the trade for Matthew Stafford. We win a Super Bowl. And then I become a head coach. So I owe so much to Sean from that standpoint. But you talk about it. I don't know if you can be a player and then be part of a coaching tree of somebody else, but I learned a ton from Coach Belichick. Last year I got to sit right next to him at these owners' meetings for 3 days, and it's like, you know, that's Coach next to me. And
was that a little weird?
At first it was, and then he had a real way of kind of breaking the ice in his own way, so he made it he made it not weird at all, and we actually had some great football discussions, and kind of, and then that carried over to when we played him on Thanksgiving this year, and spent some time with him after the game. I think the world of him, but Josh McDaniels, Billy O'Brien, Bill Belichick. I mean, there's unbelievable coaches that I was, you know, around. Being around Nick Caserio in the personnel department, I just learned so much, and had no business learning it at the time. I was so far. I mean, talk about being thrown in the deep end of the pool. But I still look back on some of those notebooks from team meetings or some of those offensive installs, and just it's like somebody teaching you things that you had no idea at the time. You're writing things down and you're really not absorbing it. And then all of a sudden you get this job and you start being responsible for a whole heck of a lot more than really just being a backup quarterback on a team. You go back through some of these notes and it's gold right there, you know, on the pages of that notebook. So I have to give so much credit. And then everybody in between. I mean, you guys know some of the best moments, some of the best playing career moments you had might have been on some of the worst teams you played for.
Oh, yeah.
You know, where you personally, individually might have been at your best. I still tell people some of the best coaching jobs that I've ever done. We might have won 4 or 5 games my first year in Cleveland doing it.
Right.
But shoot, I felt like
I coached
my tail off.
And yeah.
So that's what you learn about this is if you get, sometimes people could say it's a cliche, but if you get wrapped up in being defined by the results of what we do, whether you're a player or coach, it can really hold you back from reaching your true potential. I tend to focus as much as possible on the process of how I do things, why I do things, and then can I make the people around me better at doing what they love to do and just being a positive part of their day. So when they walk through I said it day one, year one in Minnesota, and I think we accomplished it. But I wanted our players to walk through the door and feel like, shoot, leaving at the end of the day, this was a positive thing for me today. I got better today. I like being around my teammates. I like being a part of this. It was really important for us to do that. And now we got to build on it.
I remember Rivera used to always say that. He was like, after practice was over, he would always say, you don't have to rush out of here to go home now.
Yeah.
Like, y'all can stay, because I think he just wanted us to be around each other.
Yeah.
And, just be locker room guys. I think that says a lot.
It does. And if you like your space, you want to be there, and you care about the people around you. And I think last year was such a great example of you guys really hitting it running.
Yeah.
And could you talk about maybe the success that you guys had last year? Maybe what some of the things that you saw early that you knew these guys were going to be successful? And then also, where does this team and organization, what does it look like going forward?
Yeah, I think one of the cool things for us was, I just remember coming in and guys like Eric Kendricks, Harrison Smith, Dalvin Cook, guys that have been staples, Adam Thielen, of the Minnesota Vikings organization, and have played a lot of football, won a lot of games. Harrison's...
Was he your 12, 13?
Yeah, we're lucky enough to be able to bring him back, which was huge for me to be able to keep him on our team and as part of our leadership with that C on his chest. But I knew we had a good makeup of great leaders that have been around, you know, a certain way of doing things for a long time. We were going to come in and right, wrong, or indifferent, we were going to just be different. And I told our team this. I believe so much in the why behind how we're going to do things because I just got done winning a Super Bowl doing it that way and feeling a certain kind of way every day and feeling the joy of, even in our league, when the circumstances and the stress can sometimes overtake organizations and be their demise. In LA, we just found a way to enjoy, even when we dealt with adversity. It wasn't all just smiles and candy canes, and it was real, tangible human being interaction, dealing with adversity and overcoming, winning a Super, you know, all of those things to reach the pinnacle of our profession together. So nobody can tell me nothing about there's another way to do it, because this is the way I know.
Yeah.
And I think you guys are going to enjoy this, and I think you guys are going to want to do it this way, and we'll worry about the results when they come. And, you know, I think in those close games, those end-of-game moments, we relied on that stuff. So anybody that says it's just kind of cliche, coach speak stuff, when stuff got really hard, the best version of our team came out.
They did.
And I think that, you know, we weren't always perfect. There's 1,000 things that I need to do better and that I'm working on to try to be better for our organization. But we relied on that. And it was really cool to kind of see how it happened in year one and just kind of moving forward. It's easy to do in year one, right? It's easy to come in and be different and kind of sell something off of winning a Super Bowl and, hey, we win 13 games and this is why I got all the answers. Well, now you got to go, you know, not only duplicate that in year two, but now you're playing a first place schedule. Now you're playing, now you're kind of, you're not sneaking up on anybody anymore. And, you know, we're going to have to be at our best, be more consistent with how we do it, play a better brand of football, rely on all those things and improve from a standpoint of our technique, fundamentals, and then make sure we understand the culture thing doesn't just because you achieved it in year one, it's a daily thing. Culture is people. Yeah. Culture is interaction. Culture is never missing a moment to say, hey, great job. Hey, you know, we got to get better here. That accountability thing. A new thing for me is that personal responsibility. Like, I think accountability is you guys feeling like I need to be accountable to you, but how about me being accountable to myself? Mm-hmm. That's that personal responsibility that I think is going to be huge for our team and the growth of the next generation of Minnesota Vikings leadership. Right. We got some of the best players at their position in football, Justin Jefferson, Christian Darrisaw, Brian O'Neill. I mean, we've got TJ Hockenson. We've got some unbelievably young, talented players with so much potential to be great in our league. But I want them to understand it's time for them to wear the C on their chest. Mm. It's time for them to take the next step and help be a main reason why we sustain the great culture that so many great Vikings helped us build in year one.
Yeah. So the name of this podcast is the NFL Player Second Acts Podcast. So we played, we retired, we did something else in our second act. You played, retired, you got into broadcasting.
Yeah.
Did that for a brief stint.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you enjoyed it.
What made you
want to get out of the broadcasting and get back into coaching?
Well, I had just finished up. I was doing some kind of combine training on the side, you know, the quarterback guru circuit, thinking you got all the answers. There's no scoreboard in that game, so that's one of the things.
All you need is one to hit, though.
That's right.
I watched Jordan Palmer over this last
Jordan's
week.
Jordan's awesome, man.
But he's great.
He's a good friend of mine.
Once he hit Josh Allen, he's like, bro, I got it. I got the book.
I tell him all the time.
I'm the cheat code. Go through me. Like,
I tell him all the time.
I can give you the next Josh Allen.
It is so convenient to be able to put the – and he's really good at what he does, but it is so convenient to look up at that scoreboard at whatever field that they're playing at, and that thing is off. There's no running tally. Point. There's no, you know, two unbelievable defensive players that are tasked with taking away. You know, it's just about footwork. It's about throwing a pretty spiral. Look at this cool drill you can come up with. That is, I've been down that
Setting
road
up and a it good
is
pro a fun, day with the it throws. Is, it,
oh man,
building each one off of it.
It's it like, is. I give guys a hard time because I'm jealous of those guys
because
in March and April. They're at some field for 2 hours, and then they're home with their kids and on the beach and doing all the things that they might even be having the workout on the beach for all I know. But I did that. I did some college football broadcasting. Loved it. I actually really did. I loved being able to do production meetings and meet coaches and players. Mm-hmm. I did some games up at Army. You know, I did 6 games up there and meeting some of the cadets and just totally different type of human being than what I felt like I deserved to be spending a lot of time with. These guys are unbelievable. But then Mike Pettine called and he said, you know, Mike had tried to get me to come work for him before. Rex Ryan had tried to get me to come work for him before. It just never felt right. I felt like I had kind of owed it to my wife to let her have a life. And, you know, we had moved around so much with me as a player that I wanted her to have a home base. But then Mike Pettine called and offered me the quarterback coaching job. And that was not something that I felt entitled to by any stretch, but just felt like it was an unbelievable opportunity, and I was ready to, at that point, the timing worked out, and I've been doing this ever since.
And how long before, how long did you do broadcasting?
2 years.
2 years.
So I got done playing in 2012, kind of 13, 14, I did the broadcasting stuff. And then
and quarterbacking. You helped the quarterbacks.
Yeah. So QB like guru, just man. It's on my business card. But and then 15 started coaching. And I did a training camp internship, got a chance to be around Kyle Shanahan in 2014, was awesome. So I made sure I stayed around it and really watched a bunch of tape. That's really where I like doing the draft stuff is – the on the grass stuff was fun, but I got to spend, you know, time with Marcus Mariota, Jameis Winston, you know, Johnny Manziel coming out that year, just doing ball in a quarterback, almost like a quarterback meeting room, watching tape and, you know, just trying to teach and learn myself. You know,
and how you
to
always say learning the why. Yeah. Why are you making these decisions? Why are you doing this?
And when
why?
You ask that question, it is amazing the types of things you'll hear people say, because it's never ever what you think. I'm telling you, the why matters.
Yeah,
and
most definitely.
I've just learned if you coach it and you believe it and you give these players the why, they're so smart and they're so committed to being great at what they do. I mean, you guys are two great examples of it. You guys were, you mentioned Ron Rivera already. I'm sure you guys could say coach after coach that when you close your eyes, you think back to that DB meeting when they told you why you were going to play this trap coverage a certain way, or why you had to, you know, punch at the ball the way you did. I'm sure that was natural in a lot of ways, but somebody told you why and how to do it at some point. And then you took it because you're a great player and make it your own. When I tell Justin Jefferson, this is how I want you to run this route because this and this reason, and this is why it's important, and then he goes and makes it his own at a world-class level, that to me is coaching in our league. Yeah. Coaching is not waving your finger at somebody telling them rules and this is why you can't do things and this is why my way's the only way. No, it's a truly a collaboration with world-class athletes and guys that just want to be pointed in the right direction, tell them where to go, and I promise you they're going to do everything they can to go get it done.
Now, you may have just answered this question, like literally with that answer that you just gave. That was beautiful because a lot of people don't understand that.
Yeah.
The understanding that what coaches see that really lights them up or gives them joy.
Yeah.
And you kind of just said that what gives you joy when you see these things in your special athletes. But what I want to know, though, is that so many people talk about how smart you are, your IQ, your game prep, all the things that you do before the game that leads up to this game.
Yeah.
And so could you give us an example of something that, man, this was something that I had dialed in and it showed up in the game, and it was beautiful. Like, just give us that aha moment at any point in time last year that you saw that kind of comes to mind. I see it in your eyes.
Well, only because I was just thinking about it off of that previous kind of talking about Justin Jefferson. And there was an example, you know, we were playing the Patriots on a short week, Thursday night, Thanksgiving. And, you know, people had started for the first time in his career doubling them. I mean, you guys played against players where it was, hey, cover one, double 18, wherever he is. So we were playing the Patriots. I know the background of that defensive philosophy and Coach Belichick. I could literally envision him standing up in front of the team saying, we may lose the game a couple ways, but I can tell you how it's not going to happen. We're not going to let 18 beat us.
Yep.
So I vividly remember telling Justin in a past install, hey, they're going to double team you, but I think it's going to come, if we put you in the slot, I think it's going to come from the nickel outside leverage and the safety being inside leverage from depth. I call it an east-west double. Mm-hmm. Doesn't always have to be side by side, but I told Justin, I said, if you can just vertically beat the nickel and then put your foot in the ground and vertically, you kind of treat it as a two-part process. You're just running an inside fade, but beat the nickel with your release, get up on the toes of the safety and then stick him. Mm-hmm. I promise you, double team or not, you're going to catch it. You're going to go get this ball.
The splitter.
And I got Kirk Cousins looking at me like, it's going to be double and you want him just run a fade, a go ball? And I was like, yes, I know you guys think I'm crazy. And then I kind of saw how they were playing early on in the first quarter. And I went over and I told him, I said, I'm calling this play. Don't think I'm crazy. It's going to hit. And it literally like it was almost like it fell into place in that exact moment, and it hit. And I'm over there. Justin comes running off, and it was like five plays later in the drive, and he comes running off, and I'm like, I told you about that. I told you were gonna beat that double. And he's like, Are you talking about that play five? I'm like, oh, it wasn't as big deal to you as it was to me, I guess. But this was, but that was one of those moments, and I was just thinking about it before you even asked the question, but. Stuff like that is when it kind of, I think you get it buys you some credibility
right.
with the guys. And shoot, they'll tell you for every one time like that, there's probably three times where I say some crazy stuff that doesn't end up panning out, or maybe the exact opposite thing happens. But you get those wins, you'll take them every time you can get them.
And coming from a safety, that is literally the worst route to get and try and stop in a double.
Because
it's the splitter right down the middle.
Oh, yeah. You got everything inside and downhill. Drive on this.
I'm but high also... and inside. Corners, they're nickels.
You need to pass
rush. Outside. And next thing you know, I'm sitting waiting on him to stop. And he just runs slap by everybody. And it's like the one that nobody ever talks about. But it's the one, the easiest double team beater.
Yeah.
I love it.
No, it's awesome.
13-4. Rookie season, right? You tied with two other coaches in their rookie season going 13-4. Do you know who those rookie coaches are off the top of your head? I'll give you one clue. One is coaching now. One is still coaching now.
Is it Matt?
He's one.
LaFleur? Yeah, I knew Matt. And then the other one's got to be...
So this other coach is still coaching, but in college. That's the only clue I'll give you.
Really? Was he in?
Goofy, you got the answer on your sheet. Why are you looking at me like that?
Because I'm playing it up for the camera.
Okay.
We got to be Jim Harbaugh then, right?
Oh, yeah. There you go.
It's
got
to be.
Yeah.
Because I was thinking Sam Fran was at that time. Because I know there were some other – the RPR guys had given me a list at one point this year. And I remember seeing a lot of the folks that had done it, they also had something else in common. They had pretty good quarterbacks, just like I got to have, too. In Kirk, I know Steve Young might have been somebody's quarterback at one point. But as far as those guys, Aaron Rodgers, and then I think, Jim had Alex Smith, who's I got to coach in Washington, somebody that I absolutely love Alex Smith. So, big time.
So, having the privilege and honor to shadow Sean.
Yeah.
Being in all those meetings and him kind of mentoring you along the way and trying to prepare you to become a head coach, was there one thing that happened this past season that you weren't prepared for or didn't expect or just kind of shocked you?
That's a good question. That is a good question. I would probably say there were some real personal moments for some players. We had a player lose his dad in training camp. We had a coach lose his dad in training camp. There was just some moments throughout the year, either with players having their girlfriends or wives have babies, and just these young players. Just those were the things that because you get so wrapped up in just our game, and sometimes it can feel like the most important thing in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing else matters, and then there's like a real life moment that happens, and you're just nothing more than a support system. You're just hey, football doesn't matter. Come talk to me about open up and talk to me like you would a brother or a uncle or a father or whatever, because some of these guys, if you're not going to do that for them, who will?
Yeah.
And I just found like those moments kind of, you hate to say that you needed some of those moments to truly grasp the importance of your role outside of just winning and losing. But those would probably be, I mean, some of the football things that came up, learning moments for me, but those are the moments I can remember vividly, how I felt, you know, both during and then after, and then the response from the player or coach, you know, where there's nobody else, you're the head coach, you know, yep. They're looking for guidance and support.
Right.
And are you willing to give it to them in those critical moments?
Kevin, do you think being a former player has given you an advantage for being a coach in some shape or form? Like, you know what it's like. Like, dealing with the same example you're talking about. Like, you've been in that locker room where your guy's hurting.
Yeah.
And you don't just look at it as like, I'm just focused on X's and O's.
I think it's two things. I think, yes, for a standpoint of that, of knowing the – I just remember as a player, there were some days where nobody asked me how I was doing.
Right.
You know, nobody cared how I was
– It's a great point.
So there's never a moment where if I'm walking by a player down our beautiful hallways in our buildings, brand new building that we have, whatever it is, I'm never going to not look you in the eye and say, how you doing, man?
Yeah.
Like, and you may not always tell me, hey, coach, it's actually funny, yes, I'm not doing well. You may not, but I'm going to ask you enough that if I ask you 10 times and one time I feel like that was different than the other 9 times, it's probably not going to be the last time you hear me ask about you. Mm. So it's like, I think that's important. And then the other thing is I do believe very, very strongly in the sports performance and can we run an organization from a standpoint of, I believe players are inherently, if you get the right kind of guys, I believe they're tough.
Yeah.
I believe they're smart. I believe they care about doing what it takes to win. But can we have a team that when that 3.5-hour window happens on Sunday, our players are fresher than the other side?
Yeah.
Can we put together a schedule where we're tactically, mentally prepared to play a game, but we got a little bit more life in us. We got a little bit more juice in us because of how we do things, both in training camp, game week, walkthroughs, how we travel, you know, where we put the players on the plane when we travel, like all that stuff matters.
Yeah.
Like what we feed them, what we, you know, if we're going to cut any corners, it's not going to be something that the players will feel. I can promise you that. And we're lucky to have the support we do from our owners and our organization and the great people that are around our players. And I think they felt it.
Mm-hmm.
So now it's, you know, I think that's important that we not only continue to be one of the best in the league yet.
Yeah.
But let's go try to be the best.
And I believe you guys were voted number one the first time they had this
vote. Yeah, the NFLPA thing, which it's great for me to talk about, but for the players to
I was applauding. I was going to applaud
that's
you
big,
guys.
Though.
It was
that's
huge.
So big.
The fact that was the first time this stat or this, and for those that don't know, they had a ranking that said the best player experience between each organization ranked upon
like food facilities, rest,
travel, strength conditioning, trainers, all those
things. Whole nine and the whole gambit of what it really entails.
A's across the board.
It was
that's impressive on y'all.
And that's where
it made me overlook the cold. I was
honestly, think back to this. Though, like it's easy for me to sit up here and try to take the credit, but think about like you guys can probably, I could say right now, you know, who's your favorite equipment guy?
Yeah.
And you remember. Who was your, you know, you had a trainer that you always went to.
Thanks.
Yeah, I mean, you had your strength coach that got you.
Yeah, Rusty.
I mean, it's like, so the fact is it kind of came together in a really cool way where I just wanted to empower those people. But this is the first time. That's why I told D and some of those guys with the NFLPA, I said, I love the fact that you did it. I'm sure some organizations don't. But I just like the fact that, shoot, I'm giving game balls out. You know, I'm having game balls made for our training staff and our, you know, the people that coordinate our travel logistics. And, you know,
it's a lot of work that they don't get credit
for.
It's
so much work. Nobody would ever know. So now at least there's a way for people to get credit. And
I've had former players that have gotten into that side of the business that are now coaching.
Yeah.
And they said it was a little bit tougher for them. Like non-player coaches sometimes look at players coaches as like former player coaches that, these guys come in, they think they know this or that.
Yeah.
It's a little bit tougher for the former players to all of a sudden kind of get the same credit early as the guys that were not, just because maybe it's a different grind. I don't know. Maybe you could speak on that a little bit. If you didn't seem like you've had to go through that as much, but you do understand it.
Yeah, I think I tell people a lot of times like that maybe say, hey, you were never a quality control coach. I would challenge them to go see me years 3, 4, and 5 with the New York Jets, drawing cards, running the scout team, you know, breaking down tape for Sanchez, like right. writing up the third down. Like I was doing a lot of the jobs that I now ask a assistant quarterback coach to do.
Yes.
I was doing those things while I was playing. Why? Because I learned very early on, maybe in New England or when I got to New York with Rex, you got to do something to provide value.
Yeah. And
it's really hard to provide value as a third quarterback. It was so hard that they eventually got rid of it altogether with that emergency. Maybe it's coming back. We're going to talk about that this week. But I say that, you know, I feel like that's one thing. But really, in its purest form, a good coach is a leader, a teacher, and a motivator. And if you've got if you feel like there's something positive, which I'm sure both of you guys probably do, from your playing career that can help you be a better leader, teacher, and motivator, by all means, you're going to be a really good coach. You're going to have to work really hard at it because to do it the right way, it takes a lot of time and sacrifice to do it the right way because at the end of the day, the only thing that matters is if you're a position coach, is your position group prepared as best as they possibly can be to go do their jobs? And are you – I coached Josh McCown, who was older than me. I coached him my first year coaching. And at the end of the year, I said, Josh, how did you think I did? He's like, you made me a better player. I think you did a great job. And to this very day, I'm still really close with him. And he just got into coaching.
Just got it. Yeah, just got in.
And I tried to hire him a year ago, and I love him to death. But he's going to be a great coach because he literally could sit there and say, you made me a better player, regardless of what your, you know, how many game balls you got at home or how many years you've been doing it. You have one role. How well can you, you know, execute that role for somebody else? That's what coaching is. If you're a servant mindset to being a coach and you have a background of being able to absorb some information, in the end, you still got to, you know, provide the path to guys having success on the grass. But there's a whole lot that goes into it. Can you teach? Can you lead? Can you motivate? And you're going to be just fine.
I like that. Teach, lead, motivate.
I love it. Kevin, last question before we get you out of here. This is a question we ask everybody that comes on our podcast.
Yes.
Who is on your personal Mount Rushmore?
Oh, someone that has.
And I know this would be really good
blessed
for you because,
poured into you.
You've already mentioned 12 people.
Yeah. No,
but you got to pick 4. There's only 4 spots on this mountain.
Well, I think for sure.
This is life, not just sports, not just.
Yeah, no, I think. You know, my grandfather for sure would be on there. My dad would be on there.
Tell me why your grandfather.
My grandfather, because he just, you know, was an unbelievable leader of just human beings and was a great, just had such a, didn't come from a whole lot and just kind of built an incredible life for himself. And then I got really close with him. My grandma passed away when I was in college, and he actually would drive around the country to my games in an RV.
Oh, that's awesome.
And be at the games. And then I actually trained for the draft out here in Arizona. This is where he lives. And literally lived with him, spent time. So we just became really close. But he's always, you know, just been somebody that I've looked up to. My dad was the same way. My dad was in the FBI for 25 years. Worked his absolute tail off. Talk about personal sacrifice for your family. And so those two for sure, and they get their own wing of of Mount Rushmore, I guess. But you know, Sean McVay would be on there just because of his direct impact on me, for sure. And then shoot, man,
one more.
I would probably say Bill Belichick, just because I watched I don't know if anybody loves football as much as he does. And just his impact on a team and just so many different human beings. I don't think I could be a head coach in this league without having been a player for him, if that makes any sense.
That is the ultimate compliment. Yeah. I get it. No, it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
His mannerisms, the everything.
Just, and his ability, like everybody has this perception of him and it's real. But then there's also the time walking down the hallway where he pulls you aside and says, hey, you know, this is what you're doing well. This is what you could do better. And this is how you should do it. Go do those things, and just his care of every single player on his roster, how you can help the team win, put the team first, you know, all the things that makes up what it means to play for him.
The man doesn't miss anything. He sees everything.
Sees it all.
He sees
and
it
has
all.
Respect for, you know, just some of the things he, even this year, it kind of cemented that. This year, text messages I received from him after a big win. We beat Buffalo, or we come back from 33 down against the Colts and win. Like, he was always just acknowledging those things as accomplishments.
That's sure. cool, because people have that perception of, because he's just so, he has that stoic look of just seriousness all the time. But even big teddy bear deep down inside, that's cool. That's real cool.
Yeah, for sure.
You're, man, you might be a coach now, man. Appreciate that.
We both would be really good coaches. If you ever want to get into it, man, just you know where to find me.
Will do. Will do.
And that top tier facility up in Minnesota. That's right. Is where I'll find
right?
you.
That's right.
Kevin, man, thank you, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah, appreciate you guys. Thank you.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Right there, you just heard Kevin O'Connell, head coach of the Minnesota Vikings, really giving us some insight on his whole career path from playing to all of a sudden now being the man over one of the best seasons for a first-year coach.
I don't really like him, but I like him now, though. Like, how can you not like him? And the success that he's had, like, I'm mad he's in the NFC North, but I'm don't hate me for saying this, Bears fans, but I'm kind of wanting him to succeed a little bit, because after that little interview we had, like, I like the guy.
It seems like you're still struggling to say you even like him. Like,
I am. I don't want to get crucified, but I like what he's doing in Minnesota. You know what I'm saying? But here's a counter move to that. I love what Bears GM Ryan Poles has done this offseason, and to hear more about what he's doing now and how he got his role, check him out in this interview. We got a special guest, this next guy. He's a part of the Bears organization. He spent 13 years with the Kansas City Chiefs in various roles, and now he is currently the Chicago Bears GM. Please welcome to the podcast, Mr. Ryan Poles. Welcome to the show, brother. Thanks for blessing us with your presence. Now, you have been extremely busy this offseason. Yep. And just the guy, one, being a former player on the team, and just all the buzz around Chicago and just around the league, everybody is loving what you and the rest of the organization are doing with the pick, trading it, getting rid of it, and getting more draft picks, all the signings. And like, the city is on fire right now.
The DJ Moore aspect, I got to hear it. How'd you pull that off?
We're loving it.
That was a little caveat that nobody saw happening.
Loving it.
Right.
So how does a GM negotiation for another GM, how does like that negotiation go?
Yeah, it's conversation like we're having right here.
Okay.
Obviously you do your homework of what teams, mm-hmm. you know, are looking to move up, and you start looking at their roster, you look at, you know, the picks now and in the future. And you start brainstorming, you put together different sequences that make sense, you know, for the Chicago Bears. You just have to find out if it makes sense for them.
Right.
So you go back and forth and have those conversations that go over a couple weeks. And there's some non-negotiables that you say, well, I need to have this in the package.
Okay.
And DJ was that for us.
Okay.
We wanted to add more playmakers to this roster. We want a player that can really help Justin be mm-hmm. successful. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of what we stuck with, and we went hard on that, and it worked out.
I got to know this, because, mm-hmm. all right, going through, like, player contracts, you know, trade deals, mm-hmm. I always think it's, like, it's some kind of slyness slick to the game, right? Because everybody's talking about Lamar Jackson needing an agent to do his deal. Like, yeah. do you teams ever lead out with their best deal? Like, what's the negotiation process? Or do I give you the C deal, then wait on your B deal, then all right, I'll give you, then we work our way up to the A, and then we get it all done.
Yeah, really, for any negotiation that I've been a part of, even from my time in Kansas City to now, you know, both sides start to their most favorable, you know, set up.
Okay, okay.
And then you work in from there.
Okay.
So that's kind of how it goes down.
So nobody just shows their hand early, like, okay, this is exactly what I want. Let's just...
No.
So you must be good at like getting cars, right? I'm sure you when you're trying to go get a car or buy a house, you're just like, look, man, I'm a GM of a $1 billion corporation. I know I can get the best dang deal.
Yeah.
Like that's awesome. So you spent 13 years with various titles and roles in Kansas City.
Yeah.
Being there for 13 years, like how did that prepare you to be the GM of the Chicago Bears today? Like, did you shadow people? Did you do internships? Did you shadow the GM? Were you the assistant GM? Like, how did you get into that role versus what most players do? They just kind of get into coaching and then they might make that transition into being a GM.
Yeah, you almost have to take one more step back. After I got cut from Chicago, you know, I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do. I almost took a marketing job. And then I got a call from a friend at Boston College and said, hey, you want to come down and be a GA? So I said, yeah, absolutely. You know, because at that point, that's all you know is football and you love it. You're passionate about it. So you jump in the recruiting part of it, which to me was by far the best thing I could have ever done.
Really? So you're a recruiter at Boston?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And what you learn is all the things in the office that you don't know when you're playing. So there's an example, and I laugh about it all the time. A recruiting coordinator was like, all right, we got to put these packets together. So this was before the machines stapled the paper for you. So you had to staple them all. I'm just coming in from getting cut and I'm knocking them out, just getting it done as fast as I can. Staple, put them all on my guy's desk, go work out. I come back and they're taped all over the office with a red circle around the staple. And it said, WTF. And I'm like, what did I do wrong? So I'm looking at it. And he was like, these staples should be parallel at the top on every single one. It's a small job, but be detailed about it. Mm. So those little detail things from stapling to, you know, running, get coffee, watching tape, using the computer, like all of those little things, you start to kind of sharpen that blade early to know what office life is all about. And then getting to Kansas City and really just starting at the bottom as a scouting assistant. And again, it's hard work. You know, no one really talks to you. You're grinding out tape for people. No one's saying thank you. You know, it's tough. But through that, you get a rhythm of the league. Like there used to be, now it's like electronic boards. Back then it was like magnets.
Yeah.
I remember. So you would have to do the
greens,
magnets. Right.
Blue.
And then on the board, you do the whole roster, everyone's roster in the entire league. So 31 other teams. And through the season, you start moving the tags around. And then there's an IR bucket at the bottom. You see there's 3 or 4 teams that get the injury bug every single year because you're moving all these tags down. All right, how do they replace those players? There's trades. They're going to their emergency board. So you get the flow of the league doing all these jobs that are hard work and no one's, you know, patting you on the back for, but you get a feel for what you're doing. And then through that, just getting time in college, scouting, going out on the road to pro scouting. Getting a feel for the locker room. So those things kind of morph and just allowed me to create like all these little buckets.
Mm-hmm.
So then when it's time to go, there were very few blind spots.
Right.
So that's been my path. I've been blessed too with the different jobs I've had to do, different types of GMs that I've worked for that allowed me to do what I'm doing now.
Ryan, I love that story. And you drew a great picture. For those that don't know, he's talking about the tags.
Yeah.
And so each player... Whereas like blue is mean you're like top 5.
Yeah.
Red is mean like you're a top tier Pro Bowl player.
Mm-hmm.
Green is your adequate starter.
Yep.
Then you had gray, you're like sub guy or whatever.
Right.
Special teams, whatever.
Yep. I was a blue guy.
You probably were a blue guy.
You're a blue guy too.
I was probably a red.
No, you're blue. I'm going to give it to you. You're a blue guy.
Thank you.
You're a blue guy with gray hair.
It's hilarious though to see like because your path and your journey, because I wanted to know, how do you go from being a former player to all of a sudden be an office in the office side and being a GM where you're the biggest guy in the office area? Because most office guys are not big.
Right.
They're not former players like you. They, half these guys don't even have experience in football on the field wise.
Right.
And to be in that moment to all of a sudden, I see how comfortable you are because you've done it all.
Right.
And so doing that and having that experience, maybe you could just tell us, you know, how you were so, were you uncomfortable at first?
Oh, yeah.
Were you not confident? And playing football, does it actually help you at all?
Yeah. So I'll break that down into two things. Being uncomfortable, absolutely. Because there's parts, I mean, you're writing reports, thousands of reports. And my first GM that I worked for was Scott Pioli, getting a meeting, reading my report, my head's down, and not really projecting. And after I get done with the report, takes a little break and says, hey, can I talk to you in my office? I'm like, oh, I'm about to get in trouble. So he goes, listen, he goes, I swear to you, he said this. He's like, someday you're going to be a GM. He's like, there's something about you. He goes, but when you read your report, even if you have to stand up, stand up. Project and talk with confidence so people believe in what you're talking about and what right. your report says. Mm-hmm. So just those little things are huge, but they're uncomfortable at first. Because mm-hmm. you can talk ball,
right?
But can you write a report yeah. and do it the right way? You're talking about grammar, all that, like the little mm-hmm. things that you kind of right. get away from.
Yes.
And then in terms of having the background, this is real, especially in today's game. And I got a couple guys from Ian Cunningham was on my staff. He played. Jeff King's one of our directors of player personnel. He played 6-7 years as a tight end. The coolest thing is they always bring you back to just remembering what the locker room feels when you make certain moves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're always, because even I'll get away from it because it'll be more transactional. And one of my guys will say, hold up, like if we bring this guy into the building, into the locker room, how does that make everybody else feel?
Yeah. yeah.
If you take this guy out, what is that going to do to your culture? How are we going to replace
about that? We don't think enough people realize that.
No, not even
it's,
close.
It's all about the locker room. Is this guy, if we bring him in, he's got a lot of personality.
Yeah.
Is that going to make this guy feel uncomfortable? Yeah. Is he going to be a cancer to the team? Like, I don't think fans really get that because they'll be, oh, you should just go get this player. He's like, ugh.
They think of it like
Madden. It's not a good fit.
It's not fantasy football. Yeah. Like, there's people like
it's not a good fit.
I mean, we made some trades early and we made sure just from our conversations, Matt and I went and grabbed all the leaders and had a conversation, said, this is why we're doing what we're doing. It's uncomfortable, mm-hmm. but we want to let you know how that is. I don't think people will talk about like DJ's moving out of one house into another in Carolina. He gets traded.
Yeah.
That's your life just got shaken up. Right. And you got a kid, you got another kid on the way. You got, your girl, like, there's a lot that goes into it. So from organization, we got to be there for him and, mm-hmm. and communicate properly and help him in that transition. So having that, at least being in the locker room, I didn't play the level you guys did, but you got to have that feel of how all of these things affect your locker room. And to me, it goes a long ways and the guys appreciate that.
So being the GM now and you kind of got your feet underneath you and you're moving things along. Mm-hmm. As a player, we all have that welcome to the NFL moment, like the first hit you took or something like that, that kind of really shook you. As a GM,
mm-hmm.
what was your welcome to the NFL moment? I am a GM. Holy, you know what? That just happened. Like something like you didn't see. Like something that just like took the wind out of you.
Yeah, I've talked about this openly, so it's no secret. But the first free agent signing I had was a failed physical. And it was good money. It was a player that was going to help us in our culture. It mm-hmm. was going to affect, you know, our defense, and to sit in a car and have that conversation, wanted to get ripped by his agent, but also to sit in a car and explain to him why I had to do what I had to do.
Mm-hmm.
That crushed me
yeah.
because I know that guy celebrated with his family. I know he flew up ready to go, ready to do his press conference. And that's part of this thing that's hard as a yeah. GM too, is you can fill the locker room,
yeah.
but there is a business side of this thing where you got to do right by the business. And it wasn't right. And I had to make that call. And that hurt me. Like that was a tough, and that was one of the first big things I did when I walked in the door.
Yeah.
So that was my welcome to the league moment as a general manager.
Now,
for sure.
Now Ryan, I got to know this because I've seen you the last couple of days with your family.
Yeah.
So clearly you're a family man. You yep. got your son, your daughter, your wife. You guys are all hanging out all the time.
Yeah.
Do they take a lot of pride? How often do you see them celebrate? When you make this big trade to pull off the one that you did that everybody's talking about, trading yep. away, trading back down.
Mm-hmm.
Do you guys like celebrate at the house? Are you doing like chest bumps? Like what's going on?
Champagne yeah. popping.
Like what's going on?
What's up, man?
Because
like,
yeah, I know when you score the winning touchdown.
Come on, son, up top. Hit me up top.
The big game or play, like everybody's excited for you. Yeah. How is that? Could you wrap my head around that as the GM? Because now I got my suit and tie on.
Yeah.
Like they still celebrate the same?
So my wife was a former athlete. So it's on to the next thing. So we celebrate. I mean, we're happy. Hours. You get a feel for it, but it's like you got to go back to work. Like this isn't done.
She's already on with
move on to the next one. Yeah. It's on to the next one.
Right. Something about your wife, man, keep you real humble. Like, yeah. Oh yeah, good, bro.
But yeah, she's, you know, she'll remind me this free agency. We got to win games. Like that's what it's about. So that's true.
So does your son play football?
He does.
And how cool is it for your son to see you? Like,
yeah,
my dad is the GM. Yeah. And I know he's right there in the corner, but like, yeah, is it kind of cool? It's like, yo, my dad is the GM of the Bears.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like how cool is that experience for your son to see you in the position that you're in right now?
Yeah, no, I love it. You know, I think the biggest thing for me though is just like the work ethic, the time that mm-hmm. you got to put in.
Yeah.
You know, he knows there's, five times of the week, you know, I'm getting home and he's already sleeping. So he gets how much time and effort that goes into this. But also he knows, you know, the rewards that come with doing a good job. And cool thing about him, and he's been on the Super Bowl parade. He knows what I'm trying to go for.
Yeah.
And he knows what it means to our family. So,
what advice would you give
mm-hmm.
to a player that has been released, recently retired?
Yep.
What advice would you give to that player who wants to go in the route that you went, as far as not wanting to be a coach, but yo, I want to be a GM one day.
Yeah.
I want to run a team. Like,
I told my former GM this.
Like, what
so tell me?
Yeah. What advice do you give?
Yeah. So I would say there's two routes to really dip your toe in and see if it's for you. To me, it's an internship with one of the teams
mm-hmm.
or to be a GA at the college level.
Gotcha.
Those two things for me and what I've seen it do for folks that have come through, both in Kansas City and our facility now, you get an idea of what it's all about, the time that it takes, what the lifestyle is like. Because you don't really know until you can at least dip your toe in a little bit. So that's my recommendation is to do that and get started and see if you like it or not.
But tell me this, though, because I know we got to let you go. Your Mount Rushmore of influence in your life.
Yeah.
Who would those four be?
Yeah. So got to start out with my dad for sure.
Wow.
My dad.
Yeah.
To me, I just been fortunate. I feel like I was raised the right way.
Yeah.
You know, the work ethic,
mm-hmm.
How I prioritize things in my life. Those are big, and that's kind of my foundation. Nice. So it kind of starts there. But then in the game, you know, it's really the GMs and the head coaches that I work for. You know, Scott Pioli came in, really taught me about the discipline and how to do things the right way. John Dorsey allowed me to really get an eye as an evaluator, like how to evaluate, how to build a roster, how to draft. And then Brett Veach, who's in Kansas City, you know, his style too, always anticipating. Like your brain's always got to be two steps ahead of everybody else.
Playing chess.
So that you can, so you can get the pieces that you need. And then I would say Andy Reid would be on there too. That's a guy who does it the right way, has a great relationship with players, and it's that fine line being able to push your guys, but also show love and respect to them so they're willing to do whatever, you know, for him. So I've always admired how he moves mm-hmm. and how he operates and how he leads. And the leadership piece is probably the one that sticks out too. It's like we went through some rocky things. There was losing streaks. There was winning streaks.
Right.
This dude is just stable. Like he does not like, so you'll be walking down the hallway after a 3-game losing streak. You look at Andy and see what he's doing. Same thing. Just trying to find solutions and not talking about problems. And, the way he moves through the organization and leads is incredible.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Hey, appreciate you, stopping by.
Thanks
coming through,
me.
Being a guest on the show.
Good luck.
Appreciate you.
Good luck, man. I'm rooting for you guys. I'm of course always rooting for Chicago, but especially now getting to know you and seeing your family. I know what you're about.
Yep.
Good luck, man. Do your thing. I'm so proud of you.
Appreciate it.
Me too. Let's go. Let's go. I want that ring.
Yes.
Let's go. I can't tell you how excited I am about the Chicago Bears and what Ryan Poles is doing. The buzz around town is he's making all the right moves. So, yeah, man, I'm really looking forward to the 2023 season of the Chicago Bears.
Yeah, I totally understand why you're excited, but also understand and see why other people might not be as excited. Taking advantage, like taking, for instance, Green Bay Packers.
Mm-hmm.
Or these Minnesota Vikings, anybody that has to play the Bears might not be as excited just because you understand all the great things that Ryan Poles is doing there, the way he's trying to build this team from the ground up. And also, I really appreciate all the experiences that he shared with us personally about his journey from going back to college at BC to all of a sudden being at the lowest levels at Kansas City, moving up the food chain the way that he did. You truly understand why this man is successful and why he is a budding superstar in the category of GM in the NFL.
Right. But more importantly, what we appreciate are you, the listeners. Thank you for tuning in to listening to myself and Roman Harper to the NFL Players Second Acts podcast. Keep listening.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.